Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout.
And I'm Aneke Fitz-Clark, the co-creator of this damn podcast. And I'm back. She, her, right? That's it. She that's and her. It. Yeah, there's not a third it. One? Is there a past tense? Herses? Anyways, I'm a librarian. If you bitches have been listening to past episodes, you know who I am. I'm happy to be back.
So Kamala Harris has been selected to be Joe Biden's VP, and we air out all of our grievances over the Kamala Harris VP selection, but not over the pick, but for some of the responses within our own faction of the party on this historic moment with so much at stake. What is going on, y'all? We are sounding the alarm, reminding folks of the big picture, and we are bringing to the table the receipts of Kamala Harris's full record. She's not this scary, devilish, moderate cop that she's been made out to be. We also talk about what it means for us having her on the ticket and what it should mean for every American. We get to the root of if you are struggling with coming to terms with Kamala Harris being the vice president, and our strategy for getting folks on board and hyped and ready for action, how to vote them in and hold them accountable. Plus, my progressive purity test. Yes, let's just do it. I've got one. Let's have it out once and for all. Who's what? Who's getting banished to the island of conservatives? I will say that hopefully by the end of our first segment, you will be owning your power and excited and amped to make a difference. And then in the main event, I'm still trying to find the right word to describe Melania with being disrespectful. Sorry, Akon. Sorry, Michelle. I'm going low, not high. But I am on my farmer's apology tour. A few years back, I went hard on farmers, and I am giving Black farmers the tribute and respect that they deserve as we explore their history from slavery to sharecropping to farming. And we get out why there are so few Black farmers now. Also, why George Washington Carver was more than just Mr. Peanut. Gross. I'm allergic to peanuts. Anyways, all this and so much more, it's time to learn, laugh, and play. Right here on Minority Corner.
Wait, I'm gonna eat this jelly. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, I'm good.
I thought that was a hurry up and count.
No,
and
no.
I was like, oh,
no, okay. That was me trying to get these.
I'm waiting for the count.
This juicy bear.
Okay, and are you advertising?
James. Andrew got these at Grocery Outlet. Mm-hmm. They're good.
Okay.
All
right, yeah.
They are gummy bears filled with juice.
Uh-huh. Tell me more.
Okay, fine. You don't want to talk about it.
Okay. They're,
we don't so they talk got talk about juicy bears.
So they're gushers? You got some gushers.
Sophisticated gushers.
Okay. You got your LaCroix and your gushers, and you are having the Black lady time of your life.
So juicy. So good.
Are we getting money for this? All right.
I wish. I want some of that big gummy bear money.
Okay. Well, speaking of Black ladies having the time of their life, hello, future Madam Vice President Kamala Harris, Black lady, half Indian, Asian American lady.
East Asian, Black woman, Oakland, California.
Okay, say it.
Professional ass parents. Oof. Not that that matters. You know, I don't want to, you know.
I mean,
but still.
Yeah.
It's still a big feat to have someone, also Jamaican.
Yes. I was going to say, this must resonate to you on a specific level because you both have there's a lot of similarities and backgrounds, like with your parents.
Let me
parents,
say, can I break Oakland. It down for you real quick?
Break it down for me and the peoples. Let us know.
Her father is Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
I am Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I'm, you know, heritage wise,
well, yeah,
I have a hard time.
You, it's like you like just came with like, we understand.
I know. Okay,
but you know where your lineage is.
Like, I know where my lineage is. She's from Oakland, mm-hmm. born in Oakland. I was born in Oakland. And her sister's name is Maya.
That's your baby's name.
Yes.
I thought about that too.
I know. It's wild. It's crazy.
And so it's like, and so I think that's like, to me, that's the starting off point of mm-hmm. this announcement is like, whoa, everybody do a dance in the streets because America won right now.
This is a big fucking deal.
Unless you're a racist, you should be celebrating in the streets, banging pots and pans.
Like, that we got
here.
This amazing woman of color, a black woman, an East Asian woman, on the ticket.
And family of like immigrants. Her parents had immigrated here. Like the story, she was bused, right?
Yes.
She was part of the desegregation in California. Like,
was she?
Just,
I don't know about
well,
that.
Because remember, like, she was like, Joe Biden, you were against me being
bused.
Oh,
right. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, what's so frustrating to me is that I feel like I felt like my joy as an American first and foremost and as a black person in this country quickly got zapped from my own party, which is very confusing to me because again I feel like there's even Republicans who are like, wow, that's okay, that's amazing that this happened, right? Like there
I
are
know,
some
but then we got like it's okay, so here's even more because it's our own party, but let's look at the big picture. The Democratic Party is actually like three different parties.
It's a huge tent.
It's a huge tent. And there's a reason why we have a huge tent is because we're in the two-party system. And right now we're trying to defeat Republicans who have signed on to evil. Republicans have been like, sure, yeah, we're going to hitch our wagon onto this demon.
Right.
Meanwhile, over here under our tent, we cannot sign on to even the most like... to fight evil, we can't even sign on somebody to do that.
Right.
And it hurts the most because I consider myself a progressive.
Me too.
I'm a progressive.
Me
like,
too.
Like, I am not... You two, we're not moderate. We actually think moderate Democrats...
I took a test and I am super progressive and liberal.
Exactly. But that's where it's coming from.
Right.
That's the biggest disappointment because not only is it coming from our party, it's coming from our faction of our party.
Right. The part that you and I identify with. And to me, it's the antithesis of what progressivism is. Look at just the basis of a history being made. This is what progress looks like, you know?
Yes.
And I think what we have to remind ourselves, it's the United States of America. It's not the United U of America. There are 350 million people in this country. Everybody wants different things. It was founded upon the idea of it's a big group project. It's about collaboration and compromise. You and I come from people who understand compromise. We are part of the first compromise, 3/5 compromise. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always get what you want. And okay, the first three presidents that I voted for did not believe in my ability to get married. They did not believe in it.
Right.
I still gladly...
Let's not forget that shit.
Gladly voted for them because I believe that one, they were the best option for not only for me, but for other marginalized and oppressed people, and that they could be pushed in the right direction. Which of these tickets do you believe can be pushed towards the direction that you want to see happen?
Yes, it's all about understanding. I will always remember, this is the one incident in my life that helped shape my political thinking. I was reading Rolling Stones as a young, you know, probably middle school, you know.
Okay. I like that you say it just so casually, like, oh, you know, in your middle school reading like,
well,
Rolling Stones.
I'm just saying how early
I was watching Goof Troop.
advance. I mean, I didn't know what I was looking at. I'm bringing it up as I was young because half of the stuff I didn't really understand, you know?
Totally.
And you know, when you're young, you read Rolling Stone, or back then people read Rolling Stone, to look at the, you know, ooh, Britney Spears or whatever is on it. Mm-hmm. But I happened to be very bored, only child, and was reading it from cover to cover and landed on the political section that I normally don't pay attention to at the time. But there was a line, and it was a blue line that went purple that went to a red line. And it basically described like the most liberal Democrat, and all the way through to the most conservative Republican. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it and seeing the most liberal Democrat being like some drugs for all hippie, right? Sure. And then the most conservative Republican was a fascist Nazi. And right. I'm like, why would I want to be a part of a party where the most extreme person is a fascist Nazi? Right. I want to be a part of a party that, even if it's moderate, it's going to inch me closer to everyone. Right. Like you said, getting rights, getting abilities, getting recognition, being seen, and to fight against that just because you have sensitive feelings about not getting everything that you wanted right now.
Which is very, like, that's what children believe in absolutes. We as adults learned to collaborate. Sorry to cut you off, but I just...
No, exactly. And I think that you bring up a good point, because some children learn. Some children who don't get everything. Some children who are... You learn the facts as you're growing up that, oh, I'm poor. I have to make account of, I can't get that toy. Oh, I'm black. I have to learn respectability politics around police officers. Oh, I'm a woman. I'm going to get catcalled when I walk down the street and I'm wearing a tank top. You learn these things when you're a part of these groups, but if you're not a part of those groups, you just keep going with that childhood mentality of I get everything I want.
Yep. We understand to survive the daily concessions that we have to make, right? And part of a system that is incredibly unjust. And I want to point this out too. My grandmother used to always say, know it for yourself.
Ooh, I like that.
And I think you'd appreciate this as a librarian, because there's all kinds of just like meme things being thrown around. Go know it for yourself. Go read her book. Go read what her actual record was. Like I she did the back on track reentry program that deferred jail sentences for young people. She prioritized reopening cold cases of creating a special unit that would establish an LGBT victim advocacy unit. She did things. She helped the house. She was the only, as the attorney general, the only one to hold out in when the housing market was collapsing. She was the one that turned the beat around for the country. And then Beau Biden jumped on board as he was AG of Delaware. She's one of the first leaders to say that Breonna Taylor's name and needed to, that justice needed to be called out. She, even this past spring, was out in the streets marching. Her record as a prosecutor is going to be very different than that of a senator, because the jobs are very different, right?
Yeah.
And not even to mention, like, so there was a public defense attorney who was on the opposite side of her, right? They were adversaries. She came out, she said, ideologically we were different, but Kamala Harris was the most progressive prosecutor that the state had ever seen. She chose to work from the inner workings of this. And I said this before, my dad worked for the Solano County Probation Department, juvenile Solano County Probation Department, became the deputy sheriff.
Dang.
He chose to work inside. He didn't create the system. He saw that the system was disproportionately affecting young black men. And he was like, let me be in that system. Let me be in the inner working of it to make the changes, or at least be there, because I will understand their cause. And you can't fault somebody for going the route that they did from an imperfect system. Everyone's human.
Yes.
We're all human. Who are these perfect candidates that people are looking for? Where
Ain't
are they?
Ain't nobody Mary Poppins.
And even I would like to see some of her voting records then too.
Because I'm sure it's questionable.
A spoonful of sugar, diabetes. Hello. So problematic.
I love your grandma's phrase, know it for yourself. I want that. I'm gonna embroider that on a pillow, because that's what I do now. I embroider. I love
it's a
know
good
it for yourself.
One. Know it for yourself.
Here's the thing. it's the memes that have gotten me, because people keep spreading the memes, people keep spreading these emotions, and they don't have anything to back it up. Right. You just gave us a ton of information to back it up.
And those are just a few. There's a more.
I got more.
Okay,
I got more right here.
Receipts. Receipts. Because we got them receipts. And these are receipts that they could go, you all have little.
Easy. Google.
You have a hand computer at your hand. You could, and instead you click clacking away. Spout nonsense.
For some giggles and yes men. It's time to challenge back. You can't just be like yes menning it up with your friends without background knowledge. Research it. Understand where it comes from. So on the Newsweek, in an article, basically, Newsweek is questionable. It's not terrible, but I'm going to use this because they actually quoted a government watchdog site called govtracks.us, which I looked into, and govtracks.us ranks all 100 U.S. senators with an ideological score from 1, which is the most conservative, to 0, which is the most liberal. The score is based on each senator's legislative behavior, namely how similar the pattern of bills and resolution they co-sponsor are to other Congress members. Mm-hmm. Okay. GovTrack.us gave Bernie Sanders, who all of these people who are out here trying to rally against Kamala are putting, he's the pinnacle, you know.
And you and I both voted for him back in 16, so a little caveat.
He got an ideological score of 0.02.
Okay.
Harris got a score of 0.00.
Oh.
So technically, they together are ranked the most liberal members of the Senate.
Right.
And also, the website said that Harris joined bipartisan bills the least often compared to Senate Democrats. She may have scored a slightly more liberal score than Sanders because one of her authored bills actually became law. That's amazing.
Right.
Bills take fucking forever to become law.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that she gets shit done,
right,
and she has a track record of being super liberal, and granted, this is a Senate that's led by Mitch McConnell, so we're not like dealing with the most progressive things, but still,
right, and she is, and like you said, she also is the only senator to put forth anti-lynching legislation.
Yes.
She put that forward. She called in her speech for the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Hello. Like, again, know it for yourself. Like, you've got to do your education about this is the ticket, right? So it's like, do your due diligence to find out common ground.
Yes.
Where did we have to find common ground? There are things that you and Kamala and Joe Biden have common ground on. So find those things as opposed to, you know, looking for everything. There was this one quote that I thought was really interesting. I think you've heard this before. I think this was on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, you know, people look at voting as a marriage, and instead it's public transportation.
Ah.
You're not waiting for the one who is absolutely perfect. You are getting on a bus. And if there isn't one going exactly to your destination, you don't say, oh, I'm just going to stay at home and wait for them to drop me off my house. All of the buses that left out of, like, when there were 28 people on that Democratic stage, they were all leaving out of Fascist Town. And I would gladly get on any of those buses. And we've got a bus that's going in a pretty good direction. And we
out of hell.
And who is actually even asking for directions.
Yes.
They're listening and actively asking for direction. And so you have a potential administration where you can advocate for things, or one that there's no hope. This could be our last election. I don't get it.
Eighty days away. And even less, because remember, voter suppression is happening.
Oh, right. Yeah,
Trump,
you gotta
just
vote
came
October.
Out. Trump just came out and said that he's limiting funding to the United States Postal Service to thwart mail-in ballots.
Right, which is how most of the country is going to be voting.
And you're giving your energy because Harris makes you feel weird.
And you haven't done the work. There was another poll that showed, I forget the name of the site, and I'm sorry I don't have it right in front of me, but they did a similar ranking where Kamala Harris was rated 5th as the most progressive, and Bernie Sanders was 8th. As the most progressive. So, and it's sort of this thing that really is frustrating. I think we all need to just take a pause and take a beat, because there seems to be this progressive purity test. And I have put a call to action on, there is a Dropbox folder where you can submit your receipts, because I want to know for everybody all of the things that you have voted for since you were 18. And if there's elections that you didn't vote in, how many protests did you go to or not go to? What is the date that you realized that Black Lives Matter? What is the date when you became a feminist? Do you have an iPhone? Did you purchase anything that may have been made at a sweatshop? Have you helped the homeless? Do you still watch South Park? Do you still watch Family Guy? Do you compost?
It's all these things.
Do you have a car? Do you shop at Amazon? What's your carbon footprint? Have you planted a tree? I'm going to need to see all of your past Facebook posts. I'm going to need to see all of your past tweets. Have you ever worn somebody else's culture as a costume? Do you eat meat? Is it free range? Have you ever used a racial slur or derogatory word that would refer to someone's gender or sexual identity, even amongst friends or just even in your head? Do you still listen to Michael Jackson? Are you still watching Woody Allen movies? Have you ever made a mistake? We need to stop looking for some savior perfect candidate to come along and just really look at who can we work with? All of us, whether we like it or not, because the system is so fucked, probably hurt someone's freedoms around the world in some way or aspect, but it's about striving to do the best that we can and coming together. I know it's problematic in some ways, but it was really interesting watching that show Mrs. America, at least on the progressive women who were fighting for the Equal Rights Amendment, and seeing there were many different voices, and they were meeting up with a lot of the same issues and challenges that we had, but seeing where they were able to collaborate. They had to back presidents that they were okay, this is what we've got, but they knew what was at stake and they had to rally together, even though they're a very diverse group of women who wanted different things, but they knew at the end of the day there was just going to be you win some parts and you lose some parts, but
you keep
fighting. I keep going forward.
I have two things to say.
Yes, please.
One, if you still feel weird about Harris after hearing all of this stuff that we've talked about, you need to re-examine why you feel weird about her. What about her pisses you off? Why haven't you given... Because all of this heat I'm seeing are from people who have never said anything about Trump, anything about anybody else. And I just need to want you to understand what about her pisses you off.
Yeah.
And if it's about what she looks like, what she represents, what she is saying, you are in a deep pool of... sexism,
white supremacy,
and you need to check yourself. And this is a good time to reevaluate your stuff. Second, I hate how all of her opposition is couched in Black Lives Matter. Don't go against Harris to make yourself feel good and you're a part of the party.
Right.
When you are suppressing votes by casting doubt in people's minds on your social media posts, you are then going anti-Black Lives Matter by suppressing votes for an administration that will more likely appoint judges that will be fair, that will appoint a Supreme Court justice that will be fair.
An attorney general who will prosecute cops who shoot unarmed Black men.
You are anti the movement, and I want people to recognize this because it's disgusting to me that they don't see this. They're letting their anger for Black women, and that's what it is.
Yes. And that's the thing, is that's how intrinsic and deep white supremacy and the patriarchy is that it's like having beer goggles.
Yes.
We all need to understand that's what we're looking at the world through, and so you have to check it. It's so unfair to judge her journey as a Black woman with working within the criminal justice system that she did not create, that is already flawed. She can't come in there and be defund the police. Reparations. Obama didn't do enough. The Black president cannot come in there and do that. Her journey is going to be different. That is privilege to think that. Y'all need to be, coming up and doing that. And my other thing, too, is that, some of y'all are very new to the criminal justice reform party that we've been having for a long time, okay? It's been going, some of y'all just showed up and are trying to move decorations around. And it's sorry, but Kamala Harris has actually been at the game for a very long time and a lived experience. And two, the politics of it has changed, okay? Like, the conversation has changed. The new Jim Crow, that book I'm in the middle of, didn't come out to 2010, which it was spawned the documentary 13th, a lot of the information from that documentary, and a lot of information mm-hmm. that is informing our ideas around, you know, prison industrial complex have stemmed out of books like that, and it's recent. So to hold someone to how we view things now is incorrect. And also look at what she's doing now. She's advocating even more strongly as a senator for these criminal justice reforms. So
hello, know it for yourself. For yourself. Look into yourself about why you feel this way. And you know what? Yep. I also want to point this out too, because a lot of people hear white supremacy and white supremacist and they think white people.
Oh, that's
but
not
you
me.
Know what?
Oh, it's not just for white people. It's not just for conservatives.
Of people of color.
Yes.
Black men coming out against Camilla so hard.
Yeah.
And it's...
I even saw a trans woman of color doing the same thing, and I just was like, oh.
What are you, like, why?
White supremacy is not something, anybody who cannot take a beat and just pause and celebrate this accomplishment of this woman, of this, all the backgrounds that we have listed, mm-hmm. right? And you can't take a beat, which means, and to acknowledge her journey and how she had to work twice as hard to get there. We are going to be looking at her through a thicker microscope than we did Mike Pence, than we did, like, you know, any scapegoated by. And so because white supremacy doesn't acknowledge her specific journey.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
It doesn't acknowledge all the adversity and things that she had to come through and doesn't acknowledge this historic moment. And you know what is frustrating? You and I are having to spend this time having this conversation, and that's what hurts.
That's annoying.
Instead, this should have been 20 minutes of you and I hooting and hollering, celebrating.
We did it.
Okay, let's go. Black girl magic. And instead, we are having to have a meeting with the committee and be like, what the fuck y'all doing?
What's
going on?
Because y'all have lost your minds and it's not a good look. And
I feel like it's been a filter of, like, I've been able to see on the left where we're still having to deal with white supremacy on our side. It seems like this was like a little filter that just bubbled everybody up. And it was like,
Oh, you too. Got you. And it's, and here's the thing that, like, and I can't help but make it personal, but I have to make it personal because we talked about at the start of this, there's a lot of parallels between me and her. Mm-hmm. And granted, there are a lot of things that I would critique about her, but I'm going to critique it after she's in the position.
We wait. Yes.
After she's in the position, critique away. But
and then, with that, before you jump in there, it's like, I also think, like, I'm honestly not so much focused on someone's past as much as, like, what do they intend to do?
Exactly.
Ava DuVernay really has a really good post where, like, you know, her and Kamala Harris don't agree on everything, but she said, vote them in and then hold them accountable.
Yes.
What a better usage of your time and your power of knowing that everything that you post from here on out, every conversation that you have is going to either hurt or help the true movement, which is now, right now, the wagon is hitched to the ticket of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, which is not a terrible,
it's not bad.
This is not bad. It's actually pretty good.
It's okay.
Vote
3 months. Hold your freaking mouth for 3 months and then critique. Vote and then critique away. Go ahead. But here's the thing that I have to say.
I
see all these people who are people I interact with, who are people that are my friends. And when they come out so hard against Kamala Harris, it makes me think, how do you see me? What do you think about me? When I get a job promotion, are you pissed about it? When I succeed, are you doubting, questioning everything that I do? Every fact that I say, do you second guess it? Because now that I see the way that you second guessed a superstar who, yes, has some things that you should be questioning, but I mean, in this moment, we should be excited and voting because we have a literal demon in the office, makes me wonder how you see me. And that is the fact of the matter. And that is how I'm going to go about it. And I'm at this point now where it's a pandemic. I am a mother of a toddler. I am tired. And I need as little stress in my life as possible. So you are now going to be cut from my life. Because I just can't deal. I can't deal with it.
And how frustrating, because you've mentioned this election, no matter who was going to be at the top of the ticket, this was always going to be a challenge, even though we've been given a softball of a Agent Orange has mismanaged the pandemic. There's a recession. And so this should be a real softball pitch for us to be able to rat. He's a white supremacist. This should be a softball pitch. And yet we we're having to deal with all the shenanigans that they're trying to pull with we've already have voter suppression. Yes. Russian interference.
Yes.
Why are we literally chopping off our own foot to make our own job that much harder? Why? Like, it sucks because, like you mentioned this earlier, it's like Republicans are not having to deal with this. They're not having to deal with this conversation. They're like, as long as they're for abortion, I'm fine.
Exactly.
Or, if they're Republican, I'm fine.
That's a racist. Whatever. They can. All right. It's my party ticket leader. I'm going to go, which is problematic. And yes, we should have checks and balances. But at this point, this is a point of do or die. And
it's
literally
not even
think do or
evils.
Die.
It is. This is not a joke. This is not a drill. Minority Corner is sounding the alarms.
Yes.
This could be the last election that we have.
I know.
Democracy could be done.
I know.
Like, that should be scary. We don't have time. We don't have time to be dragging our own. These are the leaders. We live in a democracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden was democratically elected.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is accepting those results and moving on and seeing how you can use your power to push that on.
Yes.
This is how people voted. Maybe it's not what you wanted, but this is what the majority of people wanted. And that's how democracy works. So rally together, move forward. And plus, we're getting Maya Rudolph back in the fall to play Kamala Harris.
That's
like,
awesome.
Find something for you to be like excited about.
Even if it's just
shutting up and not poo-pooing, not making our job
just
harder.
Don't say anything.
We already have to fight against Russia. All the things that we've listed. Pulling the money out of the voter being people to vote by mail. We don't need the added you
saying dumb shit like voting won't save your life, which is a literal quote that I saw on my Instagram feed. And I had to, literally voting could have saved 200,000 lives.
Yeah.
I read a news article saying, and this is, it's in combination, it's the ripple effect of COVID. We are up 200,000 deaths more than normal this year because of COVID and because of all of the people who couldn't have gone to the hospital because they were too packed or they were too scared to go to the hospital to get COVID and instead had a heart attack at home and died. Voting could have saved us from this because we would have had an administration that would have known what to do. So you are, by saying these things, you may think it's funny and it's a funny meme, but you are actively in voter suppression. You are actively enabling Trump to get a second term. And as James said, you are actively helping push us towards the last election we could potentially ever have.
Yep. And you're regurgitating Russian propaganda. A lot of you, trust, if you're seeing something, it could very well be from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't be a Russian agent. Like, you don't need to do that.
No.
And, I'm in the process of watching Immigration Nation, heartbreaking documentary. It's 9 episodes. Mm. I can just watch a bit by bit. But it's like, those are the people that I'm champions for.
Yes.
You know? And do you think that their lives are going to be better underneath another 50, 60 years of the Trump dynasty?
There are still children in cages.
Still in cages. And y'all want to talk about Kamala the cop. I ain't got time. Because again, know it for yourself. Look at the receipts of everything. And actually, I will say this. Kamala Harris is probably done. I don't know all of you, but she's probably done more for Black liberation than you probably have at this point or probably ever will. So, there's been some missteps, but she didn't create the system. So there you go.
Vote. My God, vote.
K Can we end on just, I'm so excited about Kamala Harris.
Yes!
Her speech
was so good.
Was so good.
She laid it out flat. She said it right. And we need that truth right there. If we want to get empowered, we need to, one, watch that speech that she did, because she laid it out so clear by saying that basically the reason that we're in this COVID mess is Trump. And two, watch her demolish Brett Kavanaugh.
Oh God, or even Jeff Sessions, or any of Bill Barr greatest hits of her
demolishing people.
It's delicious.
And that,
and just know, mark calendar, October 7th, she gonna demolish Mike Pence.
She's gonna
if he gets permission from mother.
Oh my God, Mike Pence. See, where are your critiques on Mike Pence? Mike Pence has said horrible things about people. And here, it's like, I'm excited about Kamala Harris.
Yes.
She is from Oakland. She's going to lay it down. We need her.
And part of the job of the vice president is to be the attack dog. Sorry, Tim Kaine, you were miscast for that. He's just too nice.
Who?
Uncle Tim Kaine.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And that was a legitimate who. That wasn't
hear
even you.
I didn't hear you.
Oh, okay.
You.
We get it. No one remembers
Tim
Kaine.
I know who Tim Kaine is. This is not a I'm sorry to this man moment.
Who?
This is not a I'm sorry to this man.
Oh, God, is he the Dick Cheney to your Kiki Palmer? But the part of the job of the vice president is to be the attack dog.
Yes.
They can say and do the things that the person at the top of the ticket can't say. I mean, Agent Orange is going to say whatever. And she, in her speech, has already laid it out. She is laying out the case against Agent Orange and Pence. And
she's going to fight. She's gonna
know that you've got a champion who has a history of fighting for you, for us, for all of the disenfranchised people, and let her know what you want. The door is open. They're listening.
Yes.
The bus is leaving out of Fascist Town. They are open to directions.
Get on that
let
bus.
Know.
It's a free ass ticket. We are burning in a hot pot of sludge, and you're like, I don't like the handle to this pot. Like, what is your deal? What is, like, it's so, so I'm so excited for Kamala Harris. I keep getting back 100%. To that because it's frustrating.
That's what we're going to, I want to make sure that we are now,
you
know what? We're never going to speak about this again. You know why we're never going to speak about this again? Because you and I are not going to have to read any tweets or posts because we have put this to bed and we've all rallied together. Because listen, I want all of you who are listening, we're all going to be on the right side of history.
Yes.
I want us to all to be able to look back and be like, we rallied together. I want you to be able to be a part of this and not against this. So we love you so much. That's why we're coming here and just setting the record straight.
Yeah.
We are so excited for us all
this ticket
to go out there.
Yes, this ticket is a great ticket.
It's a great ticket. So
I mean,
find your way to love it and get on board. Vote and get involved. Campaign. Get people registered to vote. Do what you need to do. If there's if you have an idea of like, I think I could do this, whether it's like having a bake sale and giving the money to, you know, a campaign or a candidate, then do that. Like, it's all hands on deck. Everything you can do. 80 days.
Because here's the thing, James. Don't we want an awesome January? Like,
January,
I mean,
so
it's
good.
Going to be, one, it's going to be cold, it's going to be winter, but you know what? Getting a new administration, potentially looking at an outlook of a post-pandemic world, we are looking towards a roaring 20s.
We definitely could. Know? Yes. Yeah. 100%.
So, like, let's aim for the best January ever.
I'm all in cosign of this. And two, something that I just sort of reminded me of too, I think with the passing of John Lewis, it has reminded me of that, like, I think he said this, but like, freedom and equality, it's a journey, not a destination. And so it's sort of like fighting for, just like breathing, it's a part of life.
Yes.
And I think even once we get into, because a woman who's a QAnon just won a congressional seat. So she's going to be potentially in Congress, right? So we don't get to stop. Like, this is a lifelong journey and commitment because people did it for
us. Never done.
And we're going to do it for the next generation, continually pushing further towards it. So
yes,
I don't even need to say suck it up because there's nothing to suck up. This is great.
Kamala Harris, enjoy it. Like, when I vote,
history
I'm going
is happening.
To enjoy voting. I'm going to be like, this is something that people who are my blood relatives couldn't do, and even to the point where they couldn't even vote for a black woman in the vice president.
Yes, I'm excited because our mothers get to vote for a black woman on the VP ticket.
That is huge.
Black women who have been the backbone of the Democratic Party for decades, who have been saving the Democratic Party with, you know, with Roy Moore down there in Alabama. God. Sage all from that. Like, and the black women have deserved a seat at the table, and it's about damn time. And it does matter. If you think it doesn't matter, again, that's your white supremacy goggles talking. Mm-hmm. So take those off. Do the work. If you're having difficulty getting excited about it, it means that there's more work for you to do. White supremacy is like intrinsic in you. And I also think too, last thing I'm going to say, but I kind of feel like putting disinformation out there, it's like not wearing a mask. Like, when you don't know it for yourself, you are spreading the virus and the disease of misinformation.
Yes.
So when you're on social media, think about, you need to put on a mask of informed, coming from a place of informed and research. Know it for yourself.
Know it for yourself. I had to repeat it.
Yes. Congratulations, Kamala Harris. Woo! We are so excited.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we host Round Springfield.
Round Springfield is a Simpsons adjacent podcast where we talk to your favorite Simpsons writers, voice actors, and everyone who's worked on the show to talk about shows that aren't The Simpsons. So we're going to be talking to people like David X. Cohen, Yeardley Smith, Tim Long about other projects they've worked on, sometimes projects that didn't go well, some failures, some rejections,
some failed pilots, some failed life events.
Yeah, we just talked to all the failures of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So if you really love your Simpsons trivia and want to get to know the people who have worked on The Simpsons a little bit better, come by Round Springfield.
Every other week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cute jeans.
Thanks. They're like my giant jeans.
You know what it is? I feel like I'm like, oh, I never see a Nike in jeans. That's because I never see you.
You don't
from...
see my bottom half. You used to see me in jeans all the time when you
don't
saw me
remember,
in person.
But I know I've seen some cute tops. Oh my God. I forgot that you what your bottom half look like.
I mean, thankfully, you know, not much has changed or going on down there. So. It's not like grown a third leg or something.
No, totally. Yeah. All right. I'm going to take you to Farm Town.
All right, cool. Let's go farming. Farmington, USA. Black farmers.
Black farmers.
They be hoeing.
Oh, I love that. They be hoeing. Okay, now I can't say anything negative about hoes anymore, so I need to find a new nickname for Melania because I want people to be hoeing it up. You changed my perspective about hoeing, so...
We just grow, learn,
what
laugh,
she,
play.
What about
remember
first
that
tramp?
Tagline?
Can I call her that? Is that too much? First tramp. Yeah. There she go, that tramp over there. Because ain't nobody trying to be tramping around. Like, people will hoe around.
I mean, it is a little...
It's almost there. But
there's
again,
always like some... I wish there was like a gender neutral term that we can call
right.
her.
First dumb, but I don't, she's more than that. Because she also...
She's like sludge.
She is, like, but like, what's like, I don't know. At first, tramp is as good as I got. Tweet at us. Look at that tramp over there. First skank. Oh,
you know
man.
The problem with all insults towards women? They all just like connotate Bring them being up. Loose sexually, which is like, what's wrong with that? That
there's
woman
nothing.
Knows how to get that woman and, get some ass. What's
and
wrong
there's
with
nothing
that?
Wrong with it. But what about a woman who does that? And also, she's a terrible human being in person. So
what
I'm
about just
to,
a
like,
woman who's a terrible human? Period.
First dumb, first terrible human, but she's not the first
trash
terrible
bag.
Human. That's the thing, is that she's her own thing. So, first trash bag, because she did wear that stupid jacket. I don't care, do you? Gonna go see some kids in cages. So, she deserves a title because she is complicit in it. She does not get a pass.
Oh, yeah.
She's
she
also
sucks.
A racist, and I just, I wanna never forget.
I don't like how people think, like, oh, we gotta say Melania. No, we don't. She's fucking signing on.
Benefiting.
Sign, sealed, delivered. She's racist.
She was like, birther, yes, let's go. Mm-mm. So, anyways, first looking at you. Anyways, this is part of my James apology tour, and this is
we
how
we be hoeing.
We be hoeing.
And I always, you know, encourage people to step in it and then come back. I was listening to one of our recent MK Rewinds, and I was going in hard on farmers. I did not know why I had so much venom for farmers.
It feels good to be on the right side of history on this one, James. It really...
But I still got you on Star Wars, Rogue One.
It's... You know what? I'm not perfect.
You're wrong.
Oh, but in terms of farmers.
Yeah, you had me. And speaking of, you know how I'm always looking at background extras?
Yes.
I am watching, Warrior Nun? And the background extras in that show are so terrible. The show could be good. The background extras, I think it's shot in Spain. And I got to just say this. Spain, your background actors, they suck. They're not good. They're not... You know what? America's got some good background talent because you believe those worlds, even in, you know, in Spain.
Because America, all the background talent, I have a feeling in Spain, it's just like, hey, you guys are eating some fucking, I don't know, what's a Spanish thing?
Tapas.
Tapas in the plaza.
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, can you come be an actor? And they're like, sure, why not? I'm a little buzzed. In America, they're like, I want to be an actress.
Me to the front. And they are committing. There's zombies. And you know what? I appreciate that commitment because I believe the world. You know, yes. I'm always looking at the background, like what's going on over there. Because
I know.
As an actor, it's my favorite part. I love being on stage, but I'm not really in the scene. I'm in other scenes, but I just get to live in the world of it, right? And it's one of my favorite things to do. And I always just like love like seeing like, oh, what are they doing? You know, I like to see the world of it. And so in Warrior Nun, there was a party and everyone was there was an intense conversation happening between like these two people, the scientists and like the Pope or whatnot. And everyone was just standing around watching. I'm like, this isn't realistic. And they were like, and sometimes they were like looking like around and be like, oh yes, like nodding, like I'm listening.
Are you listening? Oh, I'm listening too.
Okay. And then the reporters were just standing there with their microphones, just like barely blinking.
I could be a better background actor than that.
So it's a fine line. Background talent, it's not easy. It can pull you in or out of the world. So
you got to be a part of the fantasy.
Yeah. Anyways, that's the thing about that. But farmers, I don't know how we got here. Okay. So farmers, I wanted to do a story. I wanted to dive into just because, especially because like Aneke has talked about too, and we talked about in the show, there's just, especially farming, there's a history of Black people and this land. The roots and soil of this land, we have toiled it. Is that a word?
Yeah.
We have toiled this land. We have soiled this land.
Our hands all up in it.
All in this land. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give some stories and throwing respects to just the history of Black farming as part of my apology tour. Not all farmers.
Yes. I mean, come on. Like... Literally, Black people did agriculture for this country.
For free.
And like, and it's been co-opted by middle America white people.
100%. We'll get into that. So starting in the 17th century, European slave trade. Oh, and to emulate a librarian who I admire. So I looked up for this. Her name's Neke. You might know her.
Yeah, she's nice.
She's like my Wonder Twin podcasting sister.
I heard she's really sexy too.
Happy birthday, Tia Mowry. Sorry. I don't know where that
is. Where are we right now?
I was quoting the BET tweet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Where they left her out.
Oh, my God. BET was so like, good. Happy birthday, Tia Mowry. And then Tamara was like, okay, wow.
I know.
All they had to do was at one other person. Like, that seems deliberate. That seems deliberate. Only got to say happy birthday to one of the Maori sisters.
Know,
they have the same birthday. And that was from BET. Like, that is fucked up. When
BET's defense, only one of them starred in their TV show.
I don't care. They are known twins.
They are known twins.
Yes. So I referencing Kemo Bell's article in CNN, his opinion article in CNN, Plotline and
Get
Mother
those
Jones.
Citations. Get those citations.
So starting in the 17th century, European slave traders who forcibly moved Africans to this continent stole not only just our lives, but our labor, but also our agricultural knowledge. So
there's
a woman who I want to point out. Her name is Leah Penniman. She is the co-director of Soul Fire Farm in upstate New York, also the author of Farming While Black.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. And so we're going to go through the history of farming then. A little bit then ago, now and tomorrow. And
tomorrow.
So the rice empire that developed in the early U.S. Carolinas, for instance, it flourished on the farming traditions from the Senegambia region of West Africa. So
yes,
our ancestral grandmothers, when they were faced with the very possibility of being snatched up and kidnapped and forced into the transatlantic slave ships, they would gather up seeds for their families that they've been saving for their generations, like okra, cowpea millet, sorghum, black rice, and then they would braid it into their hair.
Oh, secrets. Cool. Back into our crowns again.
Yeah, because they're like, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm not going to be hungry.
I love that. Remember how we did a corner before where they used to braid patterns of like escape in the hair? Black hair is beautiful.
Black hair, it's just like we're amazing, talented spies, resourceful, like, you know, amazing.
Magic so, that we survived.
It's a miracle. We're all fucking walking miracles, and walking you're welcome. Miracles. We're not burning it all down. You're welcome.
Because we could.
We could, and we'd be justified, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, I get it.
I mean, shit on us.
Yeah. Sorry. So against all odds, and, you know, we were able to continue these practices. So
yes.
That's setting it up. So we know slavery happened 400 years, 1619 Project should be taught in schools. I want to fast forward a bit. At the end of slavery, you then had what we're going to dive into is sharecropping. So we were slaves. And as you've talked about, we were freed. And it's like, well, what else are we going to go do? Which is why a lot of jobs that Black people still had after slavery was a lot of the same things that they were still doing. So toiling the land, caretaking, we're already really fucking good at it. So after the Civil War ended in 1865, former slave owners were like helpless maids. They were like, I can't do this. Like, what am I gonna do? Like, oh no, I wish I had more free ass slaves and free labor.
Idiots. And who would have thought? Just go out there and learn how to do it.
They didn't know how to do any of that shit. And so there were, and then at the same time, though, there are millions of free slaves looking for work. So they were like, okay, fine, I'll make a deal, but you got to pay me this time. You got to pay me. Like, I think about, like, what an interesting, and like, the white man's like, sure.
Exactly. I'll pay you.
Twirling his mustache.
Yes. And
so in a lot of cases, former masters turned to their slaves for help. And so I guess it was like, okay, at least, you know, no whipping. What an interesting experience. So to like, all right, I'm leaving. Oh, I need a job. I guess I'm going back over here. Like,
which is like,
what a circle.
Oh, heartbreaking.
I would at least make sure that I'm not going to go back to my seam. I'm going to go down the road to at least work for somebody else, maybe.
I don't even know what
it's,
I would do.
What a relationship. It's fucking, it's a wild
time. I'm just
time.
So thankful.
Grateful. Every day.
I'm grateful for my ancestors who endured that. So I can just be farting around being like, what do I do today? I don't know. Turn on the TV.
Go to watch
because
Netflix.
Fuck no.
Yeah. Like, and we've earned that. You know what, Aneka? You deserve. You sit on that couch. Go put your feet up. Because your ancestors earned. Like they
would
built
want
this
me
nation.
To.
So they offered them jobs in exchange for a portion of the crop. Which seems okay. So laborers were often offered anywhere from 25% to half of the yield to keep or sell. But you also know some like weird shenanigans because you have to be like business mindset Black person because this white person's going to try to steal from you at every corner.
Let's also remember that they were trying to prevent education of enslaved people this whole time too. So these are people coming out with a handicap. You know, they know how to till the land and work it, but they may not know how to read a contract.
Right. And just like how money like works, like all this sort of stuff. We're going off of the rules that you're telling me, but I don't know all this for sure. And like still dealing with racist ass systemic systems. Again, there might have been people who were, you know, abolitionists or didn't want. No, there might have been people who were like, oh, I don't like slavery. Didn't mean that they weren't racist.
Right. They didn't want you in their house, though.
Yeah. They were like, oh, that's, you know, slavery. That's disgusting. Don't do that. But like, oh, but you're.
But Black people suck. Like, that's definitely a lot of people had that feeling.
Yeah. So the new freed peoples, like you were saying, they had no capital to begin with. They were starting from scratch. Not even a pot to piss in.
Like, what?
Yeah.
How can you even.
They had no equipment, no livestock, no place to live. So they had to buy everything on credit from the white man that they were working for.
Rude.
So
they should have been given that.
Well, that was what was supposed to happen, but what's his face? Fucked all that shit
Johnson.
Up. Yeah. So, yes. So it also just kind of reminds me of, like, think about, you know, Zippity-Doo-Dah. This is the world of Uncle Remus. He was a sharecropper, I believe.
Yes.
Right?
Which is why Song of the South is the fucking worst.
Yep. And get this, they often had to go back living in their same housing quarters.
Oh, jeez.
Except this time they're paying rent in those shitty ass. Terrible. Whole situation's terrible. It's going from one hell to another where it's like, well, at least I can, you know, run. I can leave, but where am I going to go? People are going to still probably shoot and kill me. Like, who knows? I can look at a white woman and die.
Essentially living the life of slaves with debt.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And not getting whipped. But you could still get lynched.
Oh, yeah. And so, I'm sure they got whipped too, let's be honest.
Yeah. So at the end of the first season, though, former masters overcharged their workers and kept the promised paid off. Any remaining debt was rolled over into the next year with added interest. So just fucked up banking already started. Sounds like more slavery. So
yeah, own. Now they own them.
Yep. So millions of former slaves basically were free in name only, and they were in a new economic slavery known as peonage. And Arwin Smallwood, professor and chair of the history of a political science department, Northern Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro, North Carolina. What a title!
What does that sweatshirt look like?
I thought I was gonna pass
out. What's their mascot? The Wordies? They're the Wordies. Oh,
God. I was like, I'm not gonna make it, and I can take over.
It just wraps around the sweatshirt. The football games is like the longest banner.
You're like, oh, where are you from? And he has to turn around because it's all wrapped around. So ultimately, white folks got rich and black folks got debt. Another just in the form of slavery. So the U.S. Bureau of Refugees Freedmen and Established Lands was established, also known as the Freedmen's Bureau. Clever, because it's for freedmen. It was set up in Congress by 1865, essentially to support the freed slaves. I do appreciate that there were some people in government was like, we need to like look out for these people in the system because it's going to be chaos and we need to support them. So one of its jobs was to monitor sharecropper contracts, but the Bureau was disbanded in 1872. Like, mission accomplished. Like, so it didn't even last a full 10 years. So some pockets of the South had a high rate of black folks who owned land. Often, Civil War veterans would use their service pay to buy land. Oh, also good. Note, we definitely talked about this, but they were also underpaid in the Civil War. Surprise, surprise.
Of course.
And North Carolina had many black landowners, and their children were the first students to attend A&T, the school that that guy with the long title is from. And A&T, which is short for Agricultural and Technical, it opened in 1891.
Oh, is that what all the A&T schools stand for? I didn't know that. There's a lot of A&T schools.
Agriculture and technical. So Virginia, just pointing it out, was, you know, a slaveholding state that before the war, they had a lot of tobacco. It was like their king's crop. And
that's where my people are from.
Yeah.
My American ancestors are from Virginia.
Yep. Well, and then after slavery, they were like, because it's very complicated to grow. And so afterward, they were like, we got to diversify our products into like wheat and dairy and peanuts. Gross. Put a pin in peanuts. We're going to come back to peanuts.
Just don't give James any peanuts.
Don't you give me no peanuts.
I'll eat them. I like peanuts.
So. I will die. It's not that I don't like them. I just don't like to die.
They are toxic to you. I don't want you swelling.
This just ended because it's the 400-year recognizing of since slavery, since the first slaves landed. Karen Sherry, see, not all Karens. Karen Sherry, she was completing an exhibition of African-American history in Virginia called Determined, the 400-year struggle for Black equality. That ran from June 22nd of 2019 to, it just wrapped March 29th, 2020, probably sooner because of Corona.
Wasn't what we're currently involved in.
So it's interesting because this article was written like the end of last year and just, you know, anyway. Okay, so Karen Sherry
Yes.
Not just any Karen.
A good Karen.
A good Karen. I have an aunt named Karen and it happens. Sharecropping seemed like a good idea because, you know, it seemed like it was a good idea. But what we forget is that folks were racist and couldn't help take advantage of black folks. Like, yeah. It was such a good idea that actually even some white folks started trying to become sharecroppers as well. And eventually majority of sharecroppers would be white. But whites would not get exploited with bad contracts.
Of course not. Ugh.
Yep. But African Americans, they carried the additional burden of discriminatory laws that were established in the 1800s and 1900s. So they're having to deal with all of this. Listen, we're just trying to like get our lives together of not being enslaved. And it's just fuckery all over the place. Fuckery, bullshit. You know, mm-hmm. all over I the know. Place. All
this constantly
everywhere black folks had to deal with, you know, this larger historical black backdrop that they were going through. Black families had to contend with all of the systemic racism of Jim Crow, that they faced segregation, prejudice. They couldn't get loans from banks, which highly recommend if you have Apple TV, the movie The Banker.
I've never heard
Samuel of it. Jackson and what's his name, he's the Falcon in Marvel.
Oh, fuck. I see his face.
Sam Wilson is the name of his character. Anthony Mackie. It's based on a true story. I'll have to circle back in it. It's a true story about this man who was essentially a black banker and why that doesn't exist. Anyways.
Fuck, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And like, also let's
in
remember
LA
that
in like the 1950s.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like this is current, like also like let's, entertainment was actively making fun of us too.
Yes. Oh, yes. Totally. It just the strength of black people, the strength of it. So at the turn of the century, when we go into the 1900s, early 1900s, black farmers began to save just enough money here and there to start purchasing just meager parcels of land, usually about 2.5 acres to 5 acres. So
can you imagine how much you had to save in order just to buy something like that when you're in these shitty ass contracts?
And look at this, 2.5 acres to 5 acres. How many acres were we promised?
40 for T and that mule. Thank you very much.
So having to then scrape together, figure out all of your stupid financial systems, being in debt, working my ass off to just get 5 acres to try to support. Because in that time period, because there's no grocery stores, there's no, you know, Amazon.
No.
Having land and a mule meant survival, being able to not even just survive, thrive. That meant thriving.
Right.
That meant also owning your life and being able to take care of your family.
I'd like to point out something that is also an insult that just occurred to me yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
A mule is a hybrid between a donkey and a horse, meaning that a mule is asexual. So you cannot breed mules. So even the insult of getting 40 acres in a mule meant that you got an animal that died out.
Oh, it was just like peanuts. It was like, I can't do nothing with this. Here you go.
Yes.
It was like, you know, I don't know, Christmas lights that you can't
Like you something. Can't like plant that seed again. Like you can't have like 40 acres and a donkey and then you can breed it with your neighbor's donkey so you get more donkeys. No, you get 40 acres and a mule. Like and a mule is just like, sorry.
So it should have been like, it should have been like, you know, 40 acres and like a horse or 40 acres and a cow or something that you could just do something more with. Fuck, even a chicken.
I know.
Well, thanks, sir. Yep. Even the promise of the future was already doomed from the start.
There we go.
Was already a slap in the face.
This fucking country.
That is the theme of my life. That's
I know.
That should be the name of the new history book. This fucking country.
This fucking country.
Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. So, remember I talked about peanuts? Let's talk about Mr. Peanut himself. But I love him, but I don't like what he was producing. George Washington Carver. So, he was a pioneering professor at the Tuskegee University in Alabama. And he's more than just Mr. Peanut, everybody. The whole reason Carver wanted farmers to grow peanuts was because he was trying to convince them to plant nitrogen-fixing legumes into diverse crop rotations, which would improve the soil in a region that had been burned by decades of monocrop cotton farming. So it wasn't just like, I love peanuts. Like, he was like, ooh, peanuts of the future. Because you're like, well, what the fuck? Like, peanuts? What are we going to do with a bunch of peanuts? Like, the circus coming around? Like,
he was doing way more, which sucks because they minimized him to that level.
They were like, oh, that peanut guy.
I know, here comes Mr. Peanut.
Don't cover. I had a peanut like, to do.
He's
Mr.
like,
cover.
I've done so much peanut more, guys.
Like, you took on one thing and was just like that, you know? It'd be like if someone was just like, Beyonce. Oh, she did that Single Ladies music video and that was it or something.
That's,
you know,
it. I know.
Yeah. Or Beyonce, she was in Austin Powers Gold Member. Oh yeah, I remember that.
Of course.
Or no. Oh yeah, Beyonce, Carmen the Hip Hopper. Cute. Okay, all right. Excuse me. Formation, Homecoming, Lemonade.
Hello,
what?
Way more.
Visual album. Also, Black is King. Hello. Mm-hmm. All right. Carver also developed a system of disseminating his university's research to surrounding farmers through workshops and demonstrations, as well as helping them to troubleshoot problems that they were encountering. So his system would later take form nationwide as the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Extension Program.
Amazing.
Laying down the foundation. Like,
yes,
modernizing our backwater farming techniques. He's like, what y'all doing? Okay, here's what we're going to do.
And then you label him as Mr. Peanut.
He should have been the Secretary of Agriculture. I don't know why.
Yes. All of these universities should have his name. It should be Carver University.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Not to be confused with Carter University, which is where Jay-Z just teaches you how to rap. We were just talking about him. Okay. So where have all the black farmers gone? Like, how come there's just not
all the black farmers gone?
Who, that Paula Cole?
Yes.
I hate myself for knowing. And I also want to point out that is not the first time that melody has been sung on this podcast by us.
Of course not. Of course not.
You're like, yeah.
It's a part of our soundtrack, the MP soundtrack.
It is. Yeah, that and Patti LaBelle and Beyonce songs. So loss of black farmland. So small black farmers are getting hurt even today, especially with COVID. There's a lot of attention that's being focused on bigger farms, and the small-time farmers are getting fucked over. And this actually, like, my whole entire awakening with farmers and why I was so misguided was I have to credit Queen Sugar, the TV show Queen Sugar, produced by Oprah Winfrey and Ava DuVernay. And it really is about black farming. There's a plot line with the family where they have this land, and it turns out that their family was sharecroppers who used to be slaves on that land. And there's a bigger company, this white farming company, that's trying to buy them out. And it turns out that that company used to own their ancestors. And it's trying to cheat them out of their land, which they had done to all the other black farmers nearby. And it's just like when you watch the story and you know, like, yes, okay, it's fabricated for, you know, fictional stuff. But you're like, but there's roots in it. You can tell, like, oh this shit has happened and is happening.
Yeah, they law and ordered that shit. They pulled it from the history books.
Yes, yeah. And they even talk about, like, why it's important, because part of why she becomes Queen Sugar is because she creates her own mill. Because it's not only, like, the problem is you can't just only, the farmers have to send things to the mill, but if the mill, there's not space. What's happening with a lot of these black farmers who don't own a whole lot of, like, cattle is they're not able to, the mills are so backed up because of COVID. Our food supply chain is so fucked up.
Right, it is. A lot of waste.
And there's a lot of waste. So this one guy, this one black farmer, he was pretty much told, he was like, well, when can I get this? I think he'd brought the cow there. They're like, oh, we can't do this until like 2021.
Oh my God.
And he's like, the cow's going to be too big by then. And so it's absolutely going to just sort of go to waste. And I'm sure that's happening with all kinds of different crops and cattle, that especially black farmers. And the government gave, I think, something like $33 per head. And if you don't have a lot of cattle, that doesn't do anything. For some of the big businesses, sure, that's great, because they're going to, you know, they have a lot of cattle. But if you don't have a lot, that doesn't do anything. Oh, so just how black people are continuing being, you know, fucked up even today. So, and different factories are having to be shut down because working conditions are just impossible to do social distancing. Like, COVID is showing us just how bad our systems in place are, you know?
Oh my God, it's exposing all of the inequities and the faults in the chains of command. Our system is flawed.
Yep. And what's sad is that at one time, black agriculture was where black folks could actually find a place in the American economy. We could make money off of that trade that we'd been forced to learn and perfect for 100 years. I want to point out, in Oklahoma around the 20th century, Oklahoma had over 50 thriving all black farm towns.
Wow.
So this is around the turn of the 20th century. Remember, Tulsa's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Like Wall Street. Mm-hmm. But this is how people were able to start building their wealth, and then what they were able to start passing down to their, you know, children, having this land ownership and being able to generate income for themselves. So, but racist policies and straight up violence and massacres like Tulsa would just end all of these thriving black farm towns.
Yeah, this is exactly what happened with Rosewood. This is just, you know, you see, this is where wealth inequity definitely starts, is when you see it building up with black people, it just gets wiped away by these mobs.
Yep. And in 1920, nearly a million black farmers worked on 41.4 million acres of land, making up a seventh of farm owners.
Oh my God.
Today, only about 49,000 of them remain, making up just 1.4% of the nation's farm owners, and tending a scant 4.7 million acres. That's a 90% loss.
Like, all of this just because of inequity and being wiped out and
policies and land grabs, where these big companies start getting together and just buying out these properties and land. So
insane.
Mm-hmm. And between 1920 and 1997, black farmers lost about 90% of their land that they owned, whereas white farmers only lost about 2%.
I wonder who. Look at the numbers.
And it's not because black farmers are bad at their job, because we know that that is not true, and that is a racist thing for you to say. That is not what happened.
Because we built this system.
Built this system that you're using. And so internal studies of the United States Department of Agriculture found that authorities within the organization had routinely discriminated against black farmers. And if you lost your land, the United States would work overtime to make sure that you didn't get it back.
Fucking man.
So black farm ownership peaked around 1920, which is also around the rise of the KKK. These things are not in silos. And also, this is a whole other thing that I'm not going to get into, but the USDA, there was a 2-year investigation done by The Counter, and it's a very lengthy article. I did not have time to dive into it, but it's its own beast and conversation. But this little teaser synopsis is, they did an investigation and found that the USDA promoted misleading data to depict a fictional renaissance in black farming, and that the narrative falsely inflated the department's record on civil rights and ultimately cost black farmers land, money, and agency. That is the USDA.
It's so gross how
systemic it is.
It's so gross. You have to, like we were talking about previously, you just have to be so evil and vile to set up these laws and rules to discriminate against people, to really push them into the ground. Like,
and against the people who haven't they been through enough? Leave black people alone. Forget leave Britney alone. She needs help too, but leave black people alone.
Leave us alone. Like, what? Why can't you just let it be?
You benefited for 400 years of our free labor. And all we're just trying to do is just abide by your rules, your laws, your systems, and we're just trying to live in peace. That's all it is. It costs you more effort, energy, anger, toxicity, laws. That's taking you away from shit that you could be doing. Who knows the miracle inventions that y'all could be running off and doing if you weren't spending so much of your time trying to disenfranchise another group of people. That's taxing on you.
Racism Spend time does, with your kids racism, so we don't get Trump.
Yeah, racism doesn't just hurt black people. It hurts everybody, because that's you having to live in a system that has inequality. It affects you. it affects you because you have to work doubly to uphold these systems. It's a lot of work. It's taking away from your happiness and your joy. You are suffering because you won't let things go.
It's so, yes, 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 is all like Y-E-S, James.
Spell it out for the kids. So effectively, Black-owned farmland was pushing it into the hands of white people because of these rules and equity, the USDA. During the 20th century, the price of farmland rose by a factor of 52, making it yet another vehicle for wealth building that African Americans were systemically denied access to, right? We're also denied loans, banking institutions. So the one way that we have to be able to make money on our own, you know, that we had to fight for. So the steady rise in land values, which has continued into the 21st century, makes it just a huge expense for new farmers to even break into agriculture, meaning the white dominance over farmland just, it's been a momentum that has just completely continued.
Yep.
I do want to highlight, though, that in 1997, Timothy Pigford and 400 other black farmers sued the USDA for systemic discrimination.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So the farmers, they won, but the payout took about 11 years, and it required lots of litigation to get what they deserved.
It should have just been like, oh, okay, oh, great. Sorry. Thanks. Sorry. Here's your money.
Yeah. Yep. So today, there, like we said, there's only about 45,500 black farmers. So it's just about 1.3% of all farmers. Just a handful in the United States. And in 2017, according to the most recent USDA census of agriculture, and a century ago, it was so much higher. Okay, I want to kind of close out with 2 points when we're looking into the future. One, I just kind of want to read these two quotes. They're kind of long, but I think that they're... It's from that farmer I was talking about, George, who's been struggling. And his whole family got hit with COVID.
Oh my God, I know.
He's just trying to do his farming thing, and it's really rough. And they can't use his cattle until 2021. And so they asked, like, are you going to give up? Are you going to, you know, just sell your land? Because these white big-ass companies are chomping at the bit to get his land. And he goes... No, sir. I am one of the only black farmers left in our community. They are just praying that I go away. And so it's really hard. He says, they say he's going to get tired and throw up his hands. But he says, I already told them that they'd have to carry me off. Like I told you, I promised my dad I'll be there till the end. So, ooh, you know, I might not have much to work with, but I can say that the land is going to be there.
Yes, hold on to your land.
Yeah. He goes on to talk about how, you know, he's third generation and it's something that you just have to hold on to. And he says that, you know, the last thing that he wants to do is see it sold to someone else who could take advantage of something that his grandparents fought so hard for him to save. Yes. And that the money would have been gone if they had just left this money. But the land is still here.
It's just like, you know, everything that we hold on to is just has so much weight in history behind it. You know, it just, my God, that just means so much.
And he's kind of he's part of the, you know, the third generation of black farming. And there's a new generation that is coming. There's a book called Farming While Black by the woman I had mentioned earlier. And it's called Soulfire Farm. It's in Petersburg, New York, and it focuses on training the next generation of black and brown farmers, as well as providing food and medicine for our community.
Oh, good.
And the idea is that the farm is a part of a coalition of groups claiming sovereignty and calling for reparations of land and resources so that we can grow nourishing foods and distribute it to our communities. So you're looking for things to donate to. Soulfire Farm is a great one, because there is sort of this new, Emerald was on the podcast and was talking about it, but it's like gentrifarming, where there's a lot of younger people are going into farming, but it's like mostly white because they have the resources to be able to be like, I'm just gonna go up and like farm for a bit, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And you know, we already have issues we're talking about with black people and getting access to quality foods, and so what organizations like Soulfire Farm are trying to do is to be able to help get these foods into these food deserts and these communities that have been hit hard, because that's the basis. If I can't get good food, then I'm not going to be able to really function well, like, and it just crumbles from there. So
Oh my God, I love it. I think that that's like wonderful because that is the basis of it. If you need health, that's where a lot of our like health issues come from. High yes. blood pressure.
Yes.
Obesity, all of these different things stem from the food. And if we go back to our roots with farming, that could bring us even more wealth that we yep. deserve and
yes.
is our birthright. Let's yep. be honest.
Yep. Yep, we are of the land. We deserve it. So we're having these conversations about reparations. I think 40 acres and a horse
yes.
should be on the tape. Don't you give me a mule. I don't want that mule out there.
Face. I want a horse or at least a donkey, something I could breed.
Right, yeah. I'll take a mule and a donkey, please. Like, you know, give me that. So I wanted to just for one give thanks for one my apology tour to farmers specifically. You know, we are of this land, we built this land, and I wanted to give thanks to all of the ancestors and just lift up the yes. story, because I think sometimes you hear about sharecropping or you have this imagery of just, you know, there still are Black farmers, but also why are there not Black farmers anymore? Because of the fucked up systems and histories of it. And so I wanted to give thanks and support to the Black farmers who are still out there. Thank you. And buy Black.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Renee Colbert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like.
Stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are in.
Mm-hmm.
Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, mm-hmm. you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
Here we are, dipping into the fact check. Spent a lot of time talking about Kamala Harris, and we're going to keep on that track with the fact check. So I'd reference the comments that she had made about Joe Biden in regards to busing. So Joe Biden had mentioned before the debate that he was friends with Republicans, and particularly Republicans who had supported segregation. And that's when she made the big story of like, well, Joe, I was one of those girls on that bus that was being bused. And the fact that he then chose her to be the VP, I thought was just a really brilliant moment that they could butt head to head, but still collaborate and move forward because of the danger that lies ahead. I rattled off what she had done for the housing market, and she was the only attorney general to hold out until Beau Biden of Delaware joined in, but she secured $20 billion from, because she walked away, she ended up securing $20 billion from the big banks for California homeowners who were hit hard by the foreclosure crisis. Also, a $1.2 billion judgment from for-profit colleges for defrauding students, and oversaw California's largest fraud settlement in decades against a chain of medical laboratories that overcharged the state insurance program for the poor and disabled for more than 15 years. She's also definitely against for-profit colleges, and she's a big proponent of the Green New Deal. There's a lot of great positive things that she's done in terms of advocating for the environment through her past record. A lot of good stuff. Know it for yourself. Oh, this is really dope. Kamala Harris has named her chief of staff, who is a proud Black lesbian, trailblazing political heavyweight, Karen Jean-Pierre. She is also of Haitian descent, Haitian-American political campaigner, activist, lecturer. She was the one that when some Bernie bro jumped up on the stage and tried to snatch the mic from Kamala Harris, Karine was not having it. Karine, she wasn't having it. She damn near tackled the man, pushed him away. So really exciting. Look what's happening. This is amazing. Real life lesbian Olivia Pope. If you're curious as to an Eke and I reference, we've had two fights on the podcast. One was in episode 4 and the other one was in episode 65 about Rogue One. And it was a fight and a debate about background extras, which we referenced in this episode and a lot. So if you haven't heard it, you can check it out there. Okay, we're going to cut out of here and catch us on the social medias, and we'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new MK Rewind. Stonecrit, I hope you're amped and ready to get out there and keep fighting for freedom and equality and justice for all, and whatever that looks like for you. Thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.